Oh, yeah. How you living after that long weekend? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Are you happy it's Monday? I know I am. Good to be here. What's cracking? Hope you had a great, great weekend. Welcome to the program. It is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Lots to cover off the long weekend. If you know what you want to talk about, jump in right now. Telephone number is, as you know, 1-800-636-8686. You might be trying to figure out exactly when the best time to come in is. Hey, Rome, when are the interviews? We don't want to wait on hold. Here's the thing. Even on a Monday, after a long holiday weekend, for the right telephone call, I would bust open that format because I know how hard it is to get the right telephone call. So I would bust open the format. Do not worry about when the interviews are. Call now, 1-800-636-8686. Or if you want, you can follow me on social media at Jim Rome. And you know you can still email the program at Rome, R-O-M-E, haveatake.com. R-O-M-E at haveatake.com. In terms of the interviews, coming up next segment, a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo, Therese Paylor. Top of hour number two, Oregon State with a huge win. Their head coach, Jonathan Smith, will be joining us. And in hour number three, a college football reporter for The Athletic, Andy Staples. So we're all set. And, of course, you got your ATP. Let's not waste time. I've got lots to get to regarding the NFL roundup over the weekend. Week 12. In fact, the thing about week 12 is it's not even finished yet. In fact, there are still two games that still need to be played. But that's not going to stop the Monday recap from taking place because, am I right? That was one weird ass weekend of football. And that's before I even get to the Ravens and the Steelers, which was supposed to be played Thursday night, then Sunday afternoon, and now might be Tuesday night. Like, maybe. That's before I talk about the embarrassment that was the Denver Broncos. They may get their own take a little bit later on. In order to celebrate the weirdness, I'm going to do something that I rarely do, and that's start the Monday recap with highlights from a team that lost. How about a minute for Carolina rookie Jeremy Chinn? Because my dude had himself a minute to last a lifetime. For instance, on Minnesota's third play from scrimmage in the second half, my man Chinn did this.
Bradbury, the center, has his right hand on the ball. Heavy rush coming, and Cousins lost the ball. Picked up by the Panthers, and Carolina will score right up the middle. Chinn dunks the ball over the crossbar. Touchdown, Carolina, a defensive score.
Chinn with the scoop and score and dunk. That was impressive. Really impressive. You know what's more impressive? Doing the exact same thing on the next play from scrimmage.
Cook on the handoff from Cousins, and it's taken away by Chinn, but I think a whistle had sounded. Chinn grabbed it out of the pile and took it into the end zone. The Panther sideline is celebrating like there was no whistle. That's going to be a Carolina Panther touchdown.
What in the world? Back-to-back Jeremy Chinn touchdowns?
Unbelievable.
Can I tell you something? These guys had barely even finished talking about the first one before Chinn did it again seconds later. After that, I was fully expecting this guy to complete the hat trick. I mean, that was wild. That was wild, and that was so 2020. Almost as wild as this play from the Buffalo Bills.
Guy's going to throw it behind him. DeBeasley going to throw it again to a man wide open. Gabriel Davis, touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo! Cole Beasley to Gabriel Davis. How about that?
Touchdown on the clock.
The clock.
Pretty sweet, though, right? That was a pretty sweet play, but part of not as sweet of a win for the Bills. Not as sweet because, once again, the Bills got both hands around the throat of an opponent and yet were unable to fully choke them out. But here's something that is pretty sweet. They may have trouble finishing teams. It ultimately may come back to bite them in the ass if they don't figure it out. But as of right now, the Buffalo Bills are 8-3. And on a day where they did not break 100 passing yards until late in the third quarter, they did find a way to win. Again, they do find a way to win. Unfortunately, the LA Chargers did what they've become known for. They found a way to lose. I mean, as always, I mean, don't I do this every single Monday? Don't I say the exact same thing every single Monday? You know, the old, I really like these guys. They really do have talent. I really like the organization. But they lost again. As one diehard Charger fan told me, it's like going to a funeral every single Sunday. And speaking of finding a way to win, it was not that long ago that it felt like the Tennessee Titans season was hanging in the balance. I mean, practically circling the drain after losing three or four games and trailing the Ravens by double digits in the second half. At that point, you lose that game, they're dead on arrival. Except they didn't lose that game. They completely flipped that game. And in so doing, it looks like they may have completely flipped their entire season. Because yesterday, they went out and they hammered the Colts in Indy. They put 45 on the Colts, which is the most the Colts have ever given up on home, at home. And they did it exactly the way you would expect, with Derrick Henry as a battering ram. The Colts were down three starters, but do you really think that Derrick Henry gave a damn about that? He didn't. He had six carries in the team's first 10 plays, including this touch.
Tannehill swings it out right side. Henry to the 10, to the 5, to the end zone. Touchdown, Titans! Derrick Henry catches a TD for the first time in 2020.
Titans Radio. So that was the first of three touchdowns in the first half. Let me repeat that. Derrick Henry went into Indy, and he smashed the Colts up for three TDs and 140 yards in the first half against a tough, physical, proud defense. I mean, if you want at this point, you can question Phillip Rivers all you want and the offense. But coming in, there were not any questions about that defense until Henry gashed them completely. And yes, I know, the Colts are all banged up front. Except it's 2020. It's COVID-19. Everybody has huge problems. No one really cares about whatever excuse you want to make. The Titans will give you the hands. The Titans are a really physical team. Except if you think that the Titans offense is just Derrick Henry and 10 other guys, you're a dope. Because clearly you are sleeping on A.J. Brown, and you do not want to sleep on A.J. Brown.
Blitz coming. Tannehill firing. Pass caught. Brown 45-50, 45-40, 35-30, 25-20, 15-10, 5, end zone. Ladies and gentlemen, Arthur Juan Brown, 70 yards. Touchdown, Titans!
Arthur Juan Brown, here in that government. After running through nearly every member of the Ravens defense last week, Brown ran past just about every member of the Colts on that play. But Tennessee going into Indy and doing that was not the most impressive performance of the weekend. Nope. Who does that distinction belong to? Who does that honor go to? That honor, the honor of most impressive NFL team of the weekend. That all-important honor goes to a different team. And for that announcement of that team, the team of the week, the Van Smack team of the week, Alvin, I think I will need a bed. You know that song. That's right. The Van Smack team of the week is the Raiders. Your Las Vegas Raiders. The Raiders who beat Kansas City in week 5. And then played Kansas City tight in a one-score game last week. The same Raiders who Travis Kelce called, quote, the best Raiders team I've played since I've been in the league. That crew just lost to the Atlanta Falcons. No. Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. Lost does not do it justice. That crew just got humiliated by the Atlanta Falcons. 43-6.
And you know,
I've been waiting on that. Yeah, but you know.
And you know.
Yeah, that'll happen. That'll happen. I mean, the Falcons have had a rough season, but they do still have elite weapons like Julio Jones and Todd Gurley. No, they didn't. Those two did not play. And Atlanta still publicly humiliated the Raiders. The Raiders had 5 turnovers. They had 6 points. they nearly had more turnovers than points. That's not a healthy ratio. The turnover-to-point ratio of 5-6, not good. They definitely had more penalties than they had points. And some of those penalties were downright idiotic. They had both roughing the passer and a roughing the kicker. Teams typically do not hit the roughing daily exacta. If you had that, you got paid. As Derek Carr said afterwards, the Raiders, quote, got punched in the face, and it kept happening.
We got punched in the face, and it just kept happening.
Punched in the face. My man, yeah, that. You did get punched in the face. And then you went down, and then you went to sleep, face first on the pavement. And then Atlanta proceeded to start stomping on your head while you napped it out in the street. Nate Robinson did a better job defending himself against that YouTuber than the Raiders did against that ass-kicking the Falcons put on them. Man, it got so bad, Nathan Peterman got into the game in the fourth quarter. If that's not the ultimate insult, what is? If Nathan is on the field, that means you're either up by 9 touchdowns or you're down by 9 touchdowns. Hell, how many of you even knew? Well done, Alvy. Well played. Well played. How many of you even knew that Nate Pete was still in the league? Because I didn't. And by the way, love that song. Leave it up there, Alvy. As bad as that was, if the Falcons could finish their drives with TDs instead of field goals, it would have been so much worse. The only reason why the Raiders have any hope left at all this season, the only reason why I'm not saying they should just quit and give up and go home after that performance and come back next year, is because of the team they play next, the New York Jets. Because in a world of constant change, even in 2020, the Jets are an absolute rock. You can count on them to be consistent. And that consistency is not just about consistently losing. It's about consistently sucking. It's about consistently creating controversy where there doesn't have to be any at all. You know, like Adam Gase talking after the game about who was calling the plays. And the question was, who was calling the plays? The brilliant offensive mind, Adam Gase, or the offensive coordinator, Dahl Loggins? Here is Gase with the explanation.
I didn't take over. We did this. We've done the same thing the last four games.
We were watching Dowell for the whole game. He wasn't doing anything. And he was just standing there.
He tells me it's not hard. This is not hard. We go through it, the drive before. Hey, these are the three plays. I do the third downs.
So what happens after the three plays when you have a series? Because we were watching one where Dowell was talking to Frank Pollock. He wasn't calling the plays. You were.
What part of the game was it?
I want to say that was the third quarter.
Yeah, when we got down, then I was trying to do some of the two-minute stuff.
I mean, honestly, I can't even pick out the worst part of that answer. There's the fact that I have never seen a head coach more awkward, more cringy, and more uncomfortable answering questions than Eyes. But we've known that for years. We've known that ever since he showed up at that presser with Eyes bugging right out of his head. But then there's the fact that the guy seems to be actually lying to reporters about who was calling the plays, which is a really dumb and pointless lie. And then having to come up with other lies to make the first lie hold up. What the hell does that get you, Eyes? The truth will set you free, Eyes. Try going with it once in a while. Do you really think you're fooling anybody either inside or outside your own locker room? I mean, you heard that exchange. What does that get you? What does that get you? The guy is lying about something that nobody gives a damn about anyway. Does anybody really care who's calling the plays on a team that's about to go 0-16? What does that get you, Eyes? It sounds like you're calling the plays yourself. Newsflash, Eyes. No one really gives a damn who is calling the plays on a team that's 0-16. That's what makes lying about it so stupid. Bad enough to lie, even worse to lie about something that nobody cares about that doesn't even matter. Oh, and one more lie as I go to break. Speaking of lies, was there a bigger lie anywhere than this notion that Mitchell Trubisky was going to be new and improved? Yeah, that. Except he looked exactly the same, only worse. More on that later on. I've got a ton of other NFL to get to. Like I said, that was a weird-ass weekend. And they didn't even play all the games. And then you've got the Eagles in action tonight. 1-800-636-8686. Phone lines are open. We're coming off a long weekend. So, what'd you get into this weekend? Besides all the grub and all the booze and everything else, how did your weekend go? Hit me up. I'd love to hear from you. Therese Paylor is coming up next, and then I open it up to you. We are out to Therese Paylor. He'll be coming up momentarily. In the meantime, some quick reaction coming off the long weekend. Dear Jim, how did Tyson's fight with Roy Jones Jr. turn out? I planned to watch it, but I kept falling asleep and was unable to stay up. Sincerely, Nate Robinson. Wore my upcoming bout against Ariana Grande, with the winner taking on the survivor of Hawk and Ike's hipster versus octogenarian slap fight. Signed, Denlesks. Former cut man for John Wayne Bobbitt. The rare Denlesks sighting. Hey, Rome, what's the big deal about Denver playing yesterday with no quarterbacks? We've been doing it for years. Signed, Bears fans. Jacob at Troutdale. Man, I mean, it's one thing to say something is 2020, but even in 2020, that can't happen. They had no quarterbacks. How do you have a quarterback room without quarterbacks wearing masks in the room, thereby you lose every quarterback? Put on a damn mask. You know why you want to put on a damn mask? And there's nothing political about this. Do you know why you want to put on a damn mask? So you don't have to play an NFL game without any NFL quarterbacks. Their entire quarterback room got shut down. So that's not like, it's just one of those 2020 things. That can't happen, except that it did. Shut it down. Let's go home. There are no quarterbacks. The thing is, the NFL's made it pretty clear. We're going to try and play games no matter what. We're going to do whatever we can to push through and play the games. Yeah, but we don't have any quarterbacks. Yeah, well, we're going to play anyway. 1-800-636-8686. All right, as promised, we're joined right now by a senior NFL writer for Yahoo. He is a Hall of Fame voter. He is co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. He is Therese Paylor. My man, Therese. How'd that long weekend go for you, dude? How you doing?
Oh, Jim, I'm doing great, man. Thank you for asking. Always having a good Thanksgiving, man. A lot to be grateful for this year.
Yeah. So let me first ask you, the Tennessee Titans going to Baltimore. They gather on the Ravens logo. Then they come back from double digits down the second half. They beat Baltimore. Yesterday, they gather on the Colts logo in Indianapolis. Then they beat the crap out of the Colts. What does that tell you about the attitude of this Titans team?
Well, as somebody who loves the game of football, Jim, I can tell you, I love the edge that the Titans have. Okay, because we have to look at where they are right now in the AFC. And that's on a tier below the Chiefs and the Steelers. They're like right there in that second tier with, the Bills. But so what does that mean? When they get to the playoffs, if they want to get to the Super Bowl, they'll probably have a home game in the first round. But if they want to get to the Super Bowl, they're going to have to go into Kansas City at some point. They're going to have to go into Pittsburgh, probably both those places, and win. And what do you need to do that? Well, you got to be talented, and you better have an identity, a tough guy identity, because you don't win against a good Steelers team in January without having that. And you don't beat the most special quarterback in the NFL, a team with the "we're the effing champ" swagger like the Chiefs, without having that mentality. So the point of the column I wrote about this was that, hey, you know, the Titans are showing the edge that you better have if you want to break into that top tier in the AFC. So I like what I see from them. I think they're getting better on defense. And I love the fact they know who they are, and they are extremely well coached. And that'll take you far in this league.
Therese Paylor is joining us. All right, so you got Kansas City, right? They jump out to a 17-0 lead. They were driving to go up 24-0. They still look like the team to beat, the defending champs. Like, how do you go about stopping this Kansas City offense?
You pray. But I mean, there are different strategies, right? And I think the one that's been most successful this year, because I live in Kansas City, I actually watch this team a lot. You know, the thing that's successful is that you better have four guys that can rush the passer on their own. Blitzing the Kansas City Chiefs does not work. Blitzing the Kansas City Chiefs means you have fewer guys in coverage, and because Mahomes can make five guys miss pretty easily, and he sees everybody, he's got amazing vision, you're going to get burned. So teams that have decided, you know, no, this is what we do, we blitz. They're the teams that get the ball thrown over their heads with regularity, because you can't stop Tyreek Hill, right? So the few teams that have had success against the Chiefs, what they typically do is they rush three or they rush four, and those four can get home on their own. And then coverage-wise, they play a lot of coverage behind it. They'll play zone, and they'll keep everything in front of them. So basically, they choose death by a thousand paper cuts until they get in the red zone, and they get a little bit more creative. Or even on third down, maybe you can, you know, just every once in a while, tweak it up a little bit. But you better be able to play coverage on the back end against Kansas City. And you don't want to give them the downfield shot to let them go on their Golden State Warriors-like run.
Therese Paylor joining us. All right, yeah, that's what you expect from Kansas City, right? They're multidimensional, they're creative, they're explosive, they can get you with the paper cuts, they can beat you so many different ways. But what about Tampa Bay? I mean, forget the moral victory, forget that they were coming back. What is with that offense right now? You've got the alleged GOAT, you've got all these weapons. Why is that offense not better than it is?
Okay, great question. It's one I've been pondering myself. Now, again, I watch these guys a lot, too, because it's an interesting team, Jim. But I got to tell you, I'm not seeing the offense operate the way I thought it would. So before the season, I talked to Bruce Arians. I'm like, okay, you know, here, there's a bit of a contrast here, because the way Tom Brady has played the last 5 years with the dump-offs, with the run game, with the play action, and the occasional downfield shots is not really what Bruce Arians does. It's a very vertical-based, no risk it, no biscuit offense. That's not what Tom has done. So I asked him about that, and he said, well, it's not that hard. The quarterback has the ball in his hand. But when I watch this team play football, I'm seeing a team that's very vertical-based still, and it's not really that reminiscent of the Tom Brady offense that he functioned in the previous 5 or 6 years in New England. He won 3 Super Bowls with that offense that I just described to you. A part of an issue is that the running backs are not nearly as good catching the ball as what he had at his disposal in New England, whether it was a Deion Lewis or James White type. Like, he doesn't really have that, even though those guys down that he has right now are functional. What they can do, Jim, and what they need to do more of is run the football. I know there's a, you know, push to say, hey, passing the football is the most efficient thing you can do. That's correct, but your quarterback's 43, right? So you got to run the ball and establish that. And I'm not seeing that hurt the Titans. Like, you got to line up and you got to establish your will with the run game, make it easy on Tom, then go play action off that, and then take your design shot. Yes, you've got a lot of weapons in the pass game. You do, and you got to take advantage of them. But they also have two pretty good weapons in the backfield, in Fournette and Ronald Jones. And I think that this is a team that needs to lean on the run game more, become a little bit more balanced, and I think that'll make the passing game more dangerous. So that's just my opinion, but I think that's the issue. I'm not seeing the meld of the New England style of offense, which was very much custom fit to Tom Brady, as I thought there would be in Tampa.
We are talking to Therese Paylor, and we will do so for a few more moments. I'm picking my spots carefully. I got to ask you this, though. Like, 2020 is 2020, and you never know what you're going to get week to week in the NFL. And then I would take that a step further and say you're not exactly sure what you're going to get week to week from the Raiders. But, Therese, how do you explain the Falcons smashing the Raiders the way they did and doing it without Julio Jones and Todd Gurley?
Yeah, you know, we were talking about that on our podcast last night. Like, you know, I was ready to give the Raiders a lot of credit last week. Like, they played with Kansas City. They almost won the football game. I'm like, you know what? Derek Carr has taken a step up. Like, he's really kind of changed his stars a little bit, which is something that's incredibly difficult to do. But if you're going to do that and you're going to give somebody that type of credit, they can't get smashed on the road by a team that struggled like Atlanta. There's no excuse for it, right? You know, the Falcons are playing good football under Raheem Morris, and we have to give that credit. But the thing I was most concerned with was their inability to pass block. I thought they had some issues up front. Again, the Falcons front, they haven't been that good. And that's a concern for me going forward about the Raiders. You know, if they want to take that next step and make the playoffs, they got to be more consistent, because good teams don't go down to Atlanta and lose by 30-something points.
All right, so you mentioned you live in Kansas City, but you have ties to the Detroit area. In fact, you went to the University of Detroit Jesuit High School. So what was your reaction to the news that the Lions fired head coach Matt Patricia and their GM, Bob Quinn?
Overdue. You know, I think there was an issue there, obviously, with the players. You've been seeing people dunk on Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn, you know, since that firing. Players, you know, and there's never like a great sign. You always get some of that, but let's just say there's a lot of it, Jim, a little bit too much. And, yeah, I think now you have to, I think it's a signal and a reminder that you have to treat players with respect, you know, and if you're going to be tough on them, you know, you better make sure that it's A, authentic, and that B, you know, you can, and you know, and that they'll listen. You better win. You know, there's no doubt about that. You better find a way to win to make that okay, because players don't want to be coached that way. And I think it's also a reminder that when you inherit a team that has been competitive and largely winning, I mean, they were winning under Jim Caldwell, you know, you better not just tear it down to the studs for no reason. Like, they hired Matt Patricia to take the next step. They never did. They just took multiple steps backward in the names of building the culture when none of that was needed. And that built resentment. And now you've got a losing franchise with a slow defense and a quarterback who probably needs to go elsewhere to actually fulfill his potential. It's going to go down as a shame that Matthew Stafford has been able to play for this organization, because he's a very talented guy. And, you know, even like 6 years ago, I was thinking, man, what could this guy's career had been like had he been able to play for somebody like Andy Reid? It really kind of stinks. He's a really, really talented guy. And you could put him on the subcategory of the Calvin Johnson, Barry Sanders level of players wasted by playing for that organization. But the hope is, Jim, one thing ownership does do, they get out the way. So hopefully they hire the right coach and general manager, they will get out of the way. And that's a team that can win for a long time, because they don't meddle. They've just failed to hire the right people.
Right, I was going to say, right, if they hire the right coach and the right GM. Therese, one last thought. I want to ask you about one more person before I let you go. Friday was the 13th anniversary of the murder of Sean Taylor. You had written a piece about him and his legacy back in 2018, and his name still comes up time and time again. When I'm talking to players today, and I'm not sure there's another player who is held with that level of respect and admiration. Guys absolutely loved him. When you think about him, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Well, you know, when I was in college, he was playing for Miami, and, you know, he was just a fun guy to watch and somebody that we were robbed of seeing well into his career. He was a freak. You know, I think Lewis Riddick said it right. He was like Lawrence Taylor at safety. He was an aggressive, nasty guy with amazing ball skills and speed for his size, but he was incredibly physical. He was a physical freak for the position, someone that would have redefined the position. And somebody that I think the reverential tone that current players still talk about this guy says a lot. Like, the reverential tones that Landon Collins and just take your pick. All these safeties are like, Sean Taylor was a beast, and they respect him to this day. And it saddens me, because I, as someone who loves the game of football, he's the kind of player, kind of the rare player that brought eyes to the game because of how dominant he was. And it's never a good thing, not just for his family, but for the game, and honestly, for people who love football, that we didn't get to see that guy in his prime, because it would have been special.
He is a senior NFL writer for Yahoo. He is a Hall of Fame voter as well. He is co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast, breaking it down for us on this Monday. Therese, great job, man. Appreciate you, as always. Always good to have you on this show. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks for having me. Anytime, Jim.
My man. Therese Paylor. Sean Taylor is something like, even to this day, contemporary players hold him with such reverence and admiration and respect. And there was nobody like him. He was a very, very different dude. All right, I want to talk more about Detroit. Fat Matt Pat Gonzo. Fat. I hate to do that. And in fact, I'm generally the one guarding against that. But this guy, frankly, sort of, kind of, deserves the Fat Matt Pat treatment, because he treated everybody like garbage.
Garbage.
And then got blown out. Nothing surprising there. All right, when we come back, we are open until the top of the second hour. 1-800-636-8686. Oregon State head football coach Jonathan Smith joins me then. Right now, though.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
The Monday ATP should be a layup coming off that weekend. Time to ask the pros. You get to ask me a question, and it's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Just go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Listen later on. I might answer yours. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, so some more reaction really quickly. Romy agreed. Even I think this weekend had a really weird feeling. Regards, the grip that sets in when you've been drinking and eating for 5 days straight, and the 60 minutes clock comes on. Signed, Geoff in Lincoln.
No!
Hawk is over there sadly shaking his head. I touched base with Hawk on something else yesterday. He's like, oh, dude. Man, I'm not having another drink until December 23rd. I'm not having any sugar. I came off the rails completely. I'm like, stop beating yourself up, dude. It's Thanksgiving weekend. We all came off the rails completely. Sincerely, that gigantic corned beef sando that I had at the track yesterday. Man, that was nice. That was a big win. Like I said, Gadgetta made her comeback race. Normally when you win, you say, winner, winner, chicken dinner. They don't have a saying for fourth place. Fourth place, corned beef sando. I don't know, man. Lived up to the hype, though. It was good. Really good. It's all right, man. Don't beat yourselves up. We're all back on the path today. J.P. Emmett tweets, are you being considered for that head gig for the Detroit Lions again? Signed, Wikipedia.
Wanted to ask you what your plans are if you ended up getting hired on with the Lions. Are you going to commute? Are you planning on buying a cardboard box near an off-ramp? If so, if you do get the cardboard box, just don't piss off the bums who already work at the ramp. They'll cut you real quick.
That was Mark in Chicago asking me what my plans were if I got the Lions job. And the reason he was asking that is because Wikipedia had me as a candidate. Hey, listen, I'm not at liberty to discuss those things. I will only say that if the Ford family were to call, I'm picking up the phone. And believe me, I couldn't do any worse than Fat Matt Pat.
Fat.
Daniel tweets, you just messed up big time, fat man. Signed, the Ford family firing Matt Patricia.
You just messed up big time, fat man!
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, the Matt Patricia, Bob Quinn era is, in fact, officially over in Detroit. And if I could borrow just one word from Matt Pat's physical polar opposite, Brad Pitt, I would say this toe-tagging was inevitable.
Inevitable.
The final nail in that coffin appropriately came on Thanksgiving Day, where Matt Pat's Lions got hammered by Deshaun Watson and the sub-500 Houston Texans. Apparently, Sheila Ford Hemp had seen enough, and quite literally as well, because the cameras caught the team owner with her face buried in her hands, looking mortified at what was happening down on the field. I mean, do you know how hard it is to embarrass the owner of the Lions? She covered her face. You know, like that person who's got handcuffs on, getting out of the cop car, covering their face with their sweater or their shirt. Like, they don't want to be seen. Neither did she. Not anywhere near the football team she owned. So the rocket scientist is out, and he leaves the Lions with a 13-29-1 record as their head coach. The dude and his pencil behind the ear inherited a winning football team. And then proceeded to run it right back into the ground.
I need a great
6-10 in year one, 3-12-1 in year two, and then canned dead in the middle of year three while in last place. And the only thing worse than Matt Patricia's colossal failure as head coach is how damn happy everybody is to see him go. And when I say worse, I mean worse for him. I touched on this with Therese Paylor. Detroit fan now actually reached into their pocket and started to scratch checks to the Deshaun Watson Charitable Foundation as a thank you for boxing this guy up. And most of them donated $13 as a tribute to the amount of wins that Matt Pat racked up in his 3 years in town. I mean, it's one thing for the fans to be happy he's gone. It's entirely another for the players to be happy he's gone. And they were pumped. Wideout Kenny Golladay did the 2020 version of taking a leak on somebody's grave when he liked an Instagram post that reported the firing. Like, social media can be the best thing ever, and it can be the worst thing ever, but having a star wide receiver thumb up his coach's body bagging for the entire world to see falls into the best ever category. And that was 2 days after Matt Stafford refused to back Patricia when he was asked about his coach's future.
It's not my decision. You know, that's for somebody else. You want to ask me about the game, you can ask me about the game.
I mean, Stafford could have easily have said after that Turkey Day curb stomping that Fat Matt Pat is their guy, and they're going to play hard for him, and that it's on the players, not the coaching staff. I mean, it would have been a cliche. It would have been a lie. But it would have passed the smell test, and most anybody else would have done it. Instead, he's out here making damn sure not to throw the coach any kind of life preserver whatsoever. And then again, why would he? Patricia had already ruined 2.5 years of his prime. Stafford was not going to let him waste or ruin another 2.5 seconds of his prime. Then you had that feature piece in Bleacher Report a couple of weeks back that chronicled how free agent players, quote, celebrated their freedom from Matt Patricia at the end of the 2018 season with mimosas, end quote. Quote, celebrated their freedom. You heard that correctly. Guys who played their last game for Fat Matt Pat back in 2018 brought in orange juice, champagne, and some flutes, and they went all Instagram brunch chick with it. Imagine a locker room that has never seen any champagne, ever. Except for when free agents are pouring the bubbly because they know they don't have to see the rocket scientist or his pencil ever again. Like, the stories of how much guys hated playing for Patricia are endless. And that's really something, considering he was only there for 2.5 seasons. If you really want to see how bad it got, Google Darius Slay and Matt Patricia and see what Fat Matt Pat told Darius in front of the entire team. I mean, I can't even get close to repeating that on this show, but it's horrible. And Darius Slay, obviously, is a damn good guy and damn good at his job. Two things that nobody would ever say about Fat Matt Pat. So, of course, Darius hit social with the looking eyes emoji over the weekend when Matt Pat got what he had coming to him. So it's not just that Patricia got fired. Coaches are hired to get fired, but coaches are not hired to be hated that much. I mean, that's a terrible thing to say, but how about this? You ever have a coworker or even a family member who was such a bad person that when they died, you felt guilty that you didn't feel badly about it? Like, I know that sounds terrible, but I'm just asking the question. Have any of you ever felt like that? Or, like, even worse, like, relieved? Like, there are a few people in the world that are that bad as human beings that you're not unhappy when they go, and you might even be relieved. Hell, this guy's gone, and they're not only not unhappy, they're not only relieved, they're ecstatic. This guy gets broken off, and everybody is ecstatic. Fans and players alike, and really it's not that hard to see why. because this guy rolled into town and immediately got off on the wrong foot, and it only got worse from there. Rolled into the D with a backwards hat, a giant hobo beard, a pencil behind his ear, and all this Belichick dictatorial style with none of the Belichick cred. And he took a Jim Caldwell playoff team, and he turned it into a last place team in about 3 minutes flat. I mean, I would love to tell you what I remember most about the Matt Pat era in the D. I know what it wasn't. It wasn't winning. Maybe it was that time he scolded a reporter for not sitting up straight.
Do me a favor. Just kind of sit up and just, like, have a little respect for the process. Every day you come in and ask me questions, and you just kind of, like, you know, give me this. But, I mean, like, just be a little respectful. I'm asking just to be a little respectful in this whole process, okay? So ask me a question professionally, and I'll answer it for you.
Man, that is supremely rich coming from a guy who looks and acts like Fat Matt Pat. Would that get you? FMP? All right, when we come back, more where that came from. I'm not done yet, but I'm going to change up for a moment and talk to the head football coach at Oregon State, Jonathan Smith, and your phone lines are open. Man, an open phone line is a horrible thing to waste. Get after it. We'll come back.